This is Nancy Roberts, and I'd like to welcome you to the call, How to Thrive in the New Economy. And there are also some brand new people on the call, so I want to welcome you too. So today's call, How to Thrive in the New Economy, came about because I was working on scheduling the quarterly call, and I thought, you know, what do people want to talk about, or what do they want to hear about? What do they want to want help with? What's on people's minds? And unfortunately, I guess I thought that we'd be over the conversation of the economy and the recession and all that, because it seems like people have been talking about it. We've been talking about it for so long. But when I realized what people are talking about, that's still what's on people's minds, that conversation. And it's now more or less, you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, so how can we prepare ourselves and how can we better, you know, be better able to handle whatever does come up. So I thought, well, there's some strategies that I've been learning and some strategies that I've been putting into practice in my life and in my business in the last few months to kind of deal with the ups and downs that have been working for me. So what I thought I would do is make those strategies available to you as well. I'm not always the author of the strategies. They're not always something that I've created, but where I am borrowing them from someone else, I'll make sure I give credit where credit is due. So on this teleclass, what we're going to talk about is, number one, why looking for security at this time is a waste of time. The absolute first thing you must do not to suffer in this economy. Three strategies for thriving right now instead of just surviving, like a lot of people are doing. And then we're going to talk about what disc type has a distinct advantage now that they've never had before. So to people that use the disc assessment or the disc tool, that'll be really interesting. Plus, you will learn a simple step-by-step goal-setting system that works for every style and is guaranteed to get results. I don't know about you, but I've been setting goals most of my life, and a lot of the goals I've set have not happened. And what I've been learning lately is a lot of the reason is because of the way I've been setting goals, and the strategies I've used haven't worked. So I've got some new things to share with you that I guarantee that if you use this system to set goals, it's going to change how many of them actually get accomplished. And again, just want to encourage you to stay on until the end of the call so I can give you that opportunity to experience DISC. Okay, so let's talk about if you have the form that came with your confirmation to the call, it's a great place to take notes because it kind of keeps you on track with the outline or the agenda. If you don't have the note pages, then just grab some paper and a pen because you might want to jot some things down. We're going to have a couple exercises as well that you'll need a pen and paper for. So first of all, why is looking for security at this time a waste of time? And I emphasized or I italicized the at this time in that sentence. The reason I did that is because the real question is, why is looking for security at any time a waste of time? It's not just at this time. People are thinking about security more, and people are worried about security more when the economy, you know, goes up and down like it is, or just down like it has. But the truth is, security is never a guarantee. And I only have to think back a few years myself to an example in my life where I thought I had something that was secure. If you know my story, you may know I've been in business about 7 years. And prior to that, I was at a job that I absolutely loved. And I could see myself being there for a very long time. I called myself a lifer, you know. And shortly after September 11th, of course, the company had financial trouble and had to let go of about half their staff. And so, you know, in 1 minute, my entire life changed. I was called into the conference room. I was sure I was getting a promotion or something. I didn't know. I was, you know, thinking they were going to make me a partner or something like that. And I'm told that I had to leave. And that, for anyone who's been through a layoff or anything like that, it's just shocking. And all of a sudden you realize that what you thought was secure is not secure, and it's really just an illusion. And so I started my business then, and of course starting a business is probably the least secure, but I still had this expectation that money would come, and it would come on a regular basis, and I wouldn't have an empty bank account. So of course that can be a surprise as well. And I remember it was a couple years after that I had a good client one of my best clients, and we were looking at doing a lot of work together. So I was kind of projecting that in my business, the next couple quarters were going to be really busy, I was going to be making really good money. And this client was in Gulfport, Mississippi. And you guessed it, that's around the time that Hurricane Katrina hit and unfortunately wiped out my client's business. So all of a sudden, again, I was looking at, you know, something that I thought was sure that ended up not being a sure thing. So my point is that there's a lot of things we count on, but the truth is security is just an illusion. We think we're in control of certain things, but our lives can change in a moment. And when I just think of the last 6 months of the new things that have shown up that all of a sudden we have to be concerned about that threaten our security, I mean, they're talking about, you know, now they're talking about bioterrorism. It's not just terrorism, but it's bioterrorism that could affect us in our water supplies and, you know, computer viruses and globalization and swine flu and pirates on the high seas. And, I mean, I just sometimes I hear the news and I'm like, I actually laugh. I'm like, are you kidding me? What else is there to be scared of this week? But the point is there's so many things that can threaten our security. I look at the last few years with Katrina, 9/11, the tsunami, flash floods, flash fires. And I'm not trying to depress you. I'm just pointing out that there's just so many things that we can't predict that are going to happen. The sad thing is we worry about these things, and we worry about them, you know, when we know about them, but there's so many things we don't even know about. And what I want you to do right now, and this exercise will have a point a little bit later on, it's not just a focus on our worries, but I want you to write down three things that you're most worried about right now. So just take a pen and a piece of paper and write down three things that are on the top of your mind, you know, those things that wake you up in the middle of the night, or the thing, you know, when you're falling asleep and you can't fall asleep because this thing's spinning around in your head. Just write down those three worries or those three concerns that you have that are top of your mind right now. Actually, I'll give you a couple more seconds to do that. So just write down three things that you tend to concern yourself with or that are on the top of your mind that you're worrying about right now. So when I did this exercise a few weeks ago and looked at the list, while there were things that I could do to help the situations, the truth was the things I ended up writing about were things I ultimately had no control over. I worry about my family, obviously. I worry about the economy, obviously, to some extent. And I don't ultimately have any control over that. 95% of the things that we worry about, we don't have any control over, and they rarely ever happen. So our worry ends up being a lot of wasted energy. And it's energy that we waste in, you know, worrying about these things or even talking about these things when we could use that time to be doing something productive that would move us closer to what we want or closer to our goals. But think about how much time you or someone you know or someone close to you spends, you know, complaining and being fearful and blaming other things. It just kind of like that negative point of view or negative slant on everything that's happening. And that worry that goes along with it, it really ends up wasting a lot of time. So what can we do instead of that? So instead of spending our energy, you know, waiting for security that isn't going to come or wasting our time worrying about things that we can't control. Well, this number two point is the absolute first thing you must do to not suffer in this economy. So the absolute first thing you must do is you must decide. Now, what you must decide is you must decide not to participate in the negativity that's all around and in the worry and in the fear and the frustration that surrounds us. And that's not easy to do. But to look at the word decide, what I found interesting was the word decide means to cut off all other options. Side, C-I-D-E, means to kill. So think about killing off all other options. So when you decide not to do something, that's it. I decided months ago, probably way back, I'd say in the fall, that I was not going to participate in this economy, meaning I wasn't going to watch the news tasks. I wasn't going to read the paper. I wasn't going to watch the ups and downs. I wasn't going to, you know, spend my time talking with people who were overly concerned about it. I have a, let's just say, a family member who all he seems to want to do is complain about gas prices and the government, you know, and when Bush was in office, he complained about Bush, and now that Obama's in office, he complains about Obama. And I look at it and I say, but what are you doing to work towards, you know, something else or something different? If this current situation bothers you, what can you do? Well, a lot of things you can't do anything about, but sitting around and complaining about them doesn't help either. So when you decide not to participate in negativity, then you have to decide not to suffer with other people. So again, sitting around and listening to people's, you know, woeful stories, they say that we're the average of the five people that we hang out with the most. So I remember when I first heard that, that we are the average of five people, and our finances, by the way, are usually the average of the five people we hang out with the most, I panicked because I looked at the people I spent time with and I thought, oh boy, I'm really in trouble. But think about it, your mindset, your actions, the risks that you're willing to take, the goals that you set, all those types of things are dictated a lot by your association. So think about that. You can decide not to blame or complain or talk about things that aren't working. And I find that that helps a lot, especially in business, because there's so many people right now that want to talk about how bad it is. I'd rather talk about what we can do differently than looking backwards and saying how bad things have been. And again, you cannot immerse yourself. You can decide not to immerse yourself in the media. You can be informed. You know, I still open my computer every day to MSN.com, the homepage, and I see the headlines. So I'm informed with what's going on. I don't think you can get away from the media, truthfully. You go to the gym, it's on the TVs. Even out at my bank, this really gets me. I go to the bank drive-through teller now, and there's a little panel there that's the news. And if you just sit at the teller for 2 minutes or 4 minutes or however long it takes you to do your transaction, you will see about 10 to 15 negative headlines, one after the other. And, of course, they have to make it, you know, shocking because it's got to grab your attention. So you can get your fill of negative news and things that are going on that you really don't want to know about just by sitting at the bank drive-through. So you can be informed without immersing yourself. So that's the first thing you have to do, is decide not to participate in all the negativity. The second thing that I would suggest you do is to create a goal that gets you away from, you know, whatever fear or challenging problem you're having. What's really ironic to me is that people complain about what's going on, but they don't seem to set their mind in a different direction, or they don't set a goal to get them away from what their challenge or problem is. Most people don't have goals, and most people who have goals, or at least, you know, are formulating goals in their head, don't write them down. And I read this really interesting study that was in a book by Tony Robbins. It was called Unlimited Power. I'm going to read it to you right out of the book because I couldn't even paraphrase it better than what's in here. It says, a study of the 1953 graduates of Yale University were interviewed and were asked if they had a clear, specific set of goals written down with a plan for achieving those goals. Only 3% had such written goals. 20 years later, in 1973, the researchers went back and interviewed the members of the 1953 class. They discovered that the 3% with the written specific goals were worth more in financial terms than the entire other 97% together. The interviewers also discovered that the less measurable or more subjective measures, such as the level of happiness and joy the graduates felt, also seem to be superior in the 3% with written goals. This is the power of goal setting. So I'm constantly amazed, of course, in the work that I do, that so many people don't write down goals. A lot of times it's because they don't know what they want. So I say, you know, think of something that you want. Think of something you want to accomplish and write a goal around it. But I would write it differently than we write most goals. And I'm going to give you a formula to follow for writing goals. First of all, your goal should be specific, which, you know, anyone that's done the SMART goals knows that it's specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-framed, so I'm not going to go through all that. But when you write down a specific goal, I want you to write M, T, and O on three different lines. And for M, I want you to write the word minimum. And after T, I want you to write target. And after O, I want you to write outrageous. So any goal that you want to set, I want you to write a minimum that you would like to reach, a target that you would like to reach, and an outrageous that you would like to reach for that goal. So, for example, a few months back, I was thinking, I want to find a new CPA. So my minimum for that month was just, I want to find a new CPA. My target was to have an actual appointment with that CPA in that month. And then outrageous was to hire and to turn over my books to that CPA in that month. You could do the same thing with weight loss. You know, your minimum goal for a month could be to lose 2 pounds. Target could be to lose 5. Outrageous could be to lose 7. What I have found doing my goals this way is that the minimum is almost like what you could do with almost no effort. The minimum almost just happens naturally. Probably you've done it before or something very close to it. And the minimum seems to happen pretty naturally. Even just by writing down the goal, the minimum just seems to happen because your attention is on it. The target is usually what you're aiming for. It's what you would be, you know, happy reaching. It's kind of what you really want to have happen. And then the outrageous is allowing for the possibility. And believe me, when the outrageous happens, it's so exciting. I can honestly say that you're less disappointed this way because you usually hit your minimum, and then you're happy about the minimum. But in a few instances when you hit the outrageous, it's like you have a lot to celebrate. But for the most part, I tend to hit the target goal that I set. I just went away last week to a trade show for an industry that I'm involved with for my business. And before I went, I was like, okay, well, what do I want to have happen at that trade show? And I set a minimum, target, and outrageous goal. Now, my outrageous goal was a really big goal. And I had the outrageous goal in my head the whole time, thinking, okay, I've got to contact 100 people. That was my outrageous goal. And I completely forgot about the minimum target because I was going for that outrageous. Well, what happened was I didn't hit my outrageous goal, but when all was said and done and I looked, I had exceeded my target goal, which was great because it was to get 10 solid contacts for my business. So I didn't hit outrageous, but I did more than my target, which was great. In the past, I don't even know if I would have done that without that kind of clear mindset of what I wanted to accomplish. Okay, so think of a minimum, target, and outrageous for every goal that you set. The next thing that you have to do is you have to create a plan. So you've got a goal, now you have to create a plan. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but when you're struggling with a problem, and it's one of those things that's really stressing you out, and like for days it's just weighing on you, and it's affecting your sleep, and you find yourself distracted because you just keep thinking about it. As soon as you decide on a course of action, there's that word decide again, as soon as you decide on a course of action, and you even create like a simple plan or a simple strategy for how to handle it, and it doesn't even matter if the plan is perfect, suddenly I feel better. And I think other people have this experience, too, where all of a sudden just formulating a plan makes you feel better around this situation. Because suddenly your brain is engaged in an activity besides being worried. And all of a sudden it's like you've got something productive to do. So I think getting into action is better than anything else you can do when you're struggling with something. And again, the plan doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to get into action. So once you kind of have laid out a strategy or a plan, then you got to decide on the specific actions that you're going to take. Most of the goals that we set, we really don't have a lot of control over. So even if I say my outrageous goal is to lose 10 pounds this month, I really don't have control over that because there's so many other variables to losing weight. There's, you know, water gain and sodium levels, hormonal levels. There's all kinds of things that can affect whether I lose the 10 pounds. What I do have control over, however, is my activity. So I can say, well, let's see, the last time I lost 10 pounds, I was walking, you know, 4 times a week. So that's what I'm going to commit to. That's going to be my action, is I'm not going to worry about the weight so much as I'm going to commit to those 4 times of walking 30 minutes a week. that specific action is something you do have control over and may lead you to the goal of losing 10 pounds. But either way, you know, you can complete the action. Think about the one thing that you can do next. Once you've got your, like, list of actions of things that you can do, your plan, what's the one thing you can do next? And usually when I ask people that, you know, they set a goal and I say, okay, so what's the first thing you're going to do? The first thing they're going to do is they're going to think about it, or they're going to go plan some more, or they're going to get ready. They're getting ready to get ready. All those types of things are just procrastination, and we're all good at it because I do the same thing. You know, I decide that I'm going to create a new marketing for a new product or something like that. The first thing I have to do is write the outline for the marketing, for the program, for, you know, it's like, it's just a way to delay actually doing what it is that I need to do. So when you think about the next action you can take, it should be an action. It should actually be something that you have to do that involves someone else in some way, or, you know, actually is physically something you have to do. Because even sitting down and writing a plan doesn't necessarily get you any closer to what it is that you want. So let's say you made this commitment and this decision that you were going to walk the 4 times a week. Well, going out and buying a new pair of sneakers, that's the next action. Or calling up a friend and saying, you know, I want to walk Friday afternoon, that's an action that's going to move you closer to your goal. So just make sure that your next step is an action that you can complete in a short amount of time. If you can't complete it in the next 10 minutes, it's probably not the next action to take. So look for an easy action that you can take quickly. Okay, so we're going to go on to talk about 3 strategies for thriving right now. And I've got some pictures on the form that will make sense once I give you the 3 strategies. So the first strategy is, it shows 2 people shaking hands there. The first strategy is networking. And the reason I think networking is so important is because when people get fearful, or worried, or scared, they tend to shrink, or they tend to keep to themselves. We kind of want to hide out. A little harder to do when the weather's so nice, like it is today in Rochester. But whenever I've had challenges in my business, you know, that feeling of insecurity, that feeling of fear will keep me from networking. And not putting myself out there, I guess it's, you know, you don't want to risk the exposure, or you don't want people asking how are you doing when you're not doing well. But that actually will negatively affect your business, or, you know, affect, it can even affect your career. So I always tell people who are working and have a job, they should be networking as well. Any opportunity you're looking for, whether it's a new job or a client or anything, can be found through networking. Now, granted, you can waste a lot of time networking. That's probably the downside to it. And there's some behavioral styles or some personality types that don't enjoy networking, so that's another challenge. But the benefit of networking, right now I'm talking about face-to-face networking, is that people do business with people they know, like, and trust. And it's the same for giving someone a job, and it's the same for, you know, giving someone an opportunity, is you're going to do it with people you know, like, and trust. So that's the great thing about networking. What's interesting is when I was at this event last week in New Orleans, again, it was a trade show, what happened was most of the great connections that I made, most of the good leads for my business came from the times when I was networking socially. It's not when we were, like, in business mode, but it was, you know, at the dinners or even by the pool. I met a nice couple that owned some businesses up in South Bend. So just getting to know people on, like, that casual basis furthers your relationship and opens the door for more opportunities. Relationships always lead to opportunities. So the 4 different DISC styles all will have their challenges or likes or dislikes with networking. And if you don't know the DISC style, I'm just going to talk about them briefly. You'll be able to find out exactly what your DISC style is at the end of this teleclass, so just hold on. But high dominance people, so D stands for dominance, they're extroverted and they're task-oriented. So when they go into a networking situation, they're all about business. They can't stand the chit-chat. They can't stand the small talk. They want to talk, but they want to talk about, you know, business and politics and sports and things that, you know, are results oriented, because that's what their focus is. So high dominant people, when you're talking to them, you know, keep your comments brief. Keep the conversation lively, and don't expect to talk to them for a long time. High dominant people won't tend to stay and chat with the same person for an hour. They're going to be there for 10 minutes, lose interest, and then move on. So when you're networking with them, make sure you get their card. That's an important thing. If you're a high dominant person, just try and chit-chat a little bit more with people, because that's what other styles want and appreciate. The high influence style, so this is the really people-oriented style. This is the extrovert who loves networking. And they're people-oriented and they're relationship-oriented, and they're the most natural networking. High eyes are people that really enjoy it. They don't mind the small talk. They like talking to people about personal things, so they tend to be the most natural networkers. And if you're talking to a high eye, then just be fun and engaging and open up, because they're very personable. High steadiness people are introverted, but they're people-oriented. So they're people-oriented, but they're shy. And sometimes this is, you know, a type of person who doesn't like the networking. Like, they walk in and they feel uncomfortable because they don't know anybody, and it's, like, you know, really hard for them to connect and engage with people naturally. So it's a bit uncomfortable. With high steadiness people, I always tell them to make sure that they go with a friend. You know, take a coworker or take a friend with you to do networking. It makes it easier for you. But don't shrink into the background, though. So just if you're with someone who happens to be more extroverted than you, don't become the wallflower and miss out on the opportunity to connect with people, because getting to know people is where the opportunities will come from. High compliant people are introverted but task-oriented. So these are probably the most uncomfortable people when it comes to networking. They don't enjoy the chit-chat or the small talk. They don't usually connect with people on a personal basis unless there's something, you know, that they have in common. So what I always tell high-compliant people to do is go with questions in mind. Because if you ask people questions in a networking situation, the focus isn't on you. You don't have to worry about carrying the conversation. You can just ask questions, and people will love to talk to you and share their story. And if you want, another thing that works, too, is to ask the host to introduce you to someone that you have someone in common with. So, you know, there's usually a host or some type of facilitator to most networking events or parties or whatever. So make sure that, you know, that person can help you connect with people. So any opportunity that you have to get out and network, and summer months are great because there's parties and picnics and festivals and all sorts of things, I would encourage you to do that, because you never know when the next opportunity is, you know, where it's going to come from. Another part to networking nowadays is something completely different than the face-to-face networking. It's using social media to connect with people. So we're talking about Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, and using blogs and YouTube and your website. And it's definitely the newest way to network. And people are always asking me, especially people that are reluctant to do it, is this something that I have to do? And I'll have to admit, I was a little reluctant myself because of the time factor. I really did not envision myself spending, you know, hours in front of the more than I already do, in front of the computer, you know, being sociable with people, because I'm sociable face-to-face, so why would I want to do this online? Well, if the business reason behind it is that that's how people find you nowadays. If you're looking for a job, companies are online looking, you know, at people's online profiles and reading about them. So in essence, you do it because you don't want to get left behind. That's why I started. I'm on Twitter, but I'm not posting yet on Twitter. I do have a Facebook page and a blog. But I did it because I didn't want to look irrelevant, and I didn't want people to think that I wasn't out there and wanting to connect with them. So I think, you know, people, depending on where they are at, are going to have different purposes for using social media and social networking. I think the most important thing, though, is to be balanced with it, because I think it is something that can consume you. I think you can actually get so far into the, you know, internet world that you're not living in the real world anymore. And I found out something really interesting. Someone told me that they've they've measured that when you get a response to like a tweet, or which is a Twitter post or a post that you put on a blog or a Facebook, that when people respond to that, there's actually a reaction in your brain that sends out endorphins, which are the feel-good, you know, hormones. So what they found is that people are actually getting addicted to these sites because of that feel-good feeling when someone responds to something that you've posted. So it's interesting. I've been able to watch from that perspective of when I post something and nobody responds, I kind of have that aww kind of feeling, like nobody cared or nobody saw it, or, you know, and then when somebody does respond, I get really excited. So I think you do have to be really careful with that, because you don't want to get so involved in that that you forget other forms of networking and building relationships with people. The interesting thing about social media, though, is that all of a sudden, I think the introverted people of the world now have a tool or a mechanism that they didn't have before that gave extroverts a real distinct advantage. So, and I'm talking about the S and the C, or the steadiness and compliant behavioral styles, because on the web, you can show your personality. You know, you can have fun. You can take more risks online than you normally would maybe in a social situation or setting. So I, for example, I know network marketers, people who market internet marketers, people who are marketing businesses online, who are very introverted, and they're doing very well online because everything's behind the scenes. So I think on the plus side, there is an advantage there now that introverted people didn't have in the past, and I do think it's something people should be involved with. Again, just another way to connect with people, but the caution is there to just, you know, keep it in balance. So number two, so the second strategy for thriving right now, this kind of goes back and relates to goal setting as well, is having accountability. So having some sort of group or people or person around you, a coach, a team, that can keep you accountable. Because anything that you want to accomplish in this economy, any goal you want to set, if the only person who knows about it is you, chances are you're not going to succeed. And unfortunately, most people aren't so self-driven, self-motivated, or self-disciplined in order to keep themselves on task. So you really have to make a commitment outside yourself. Unfortunately, we don't seem to have a problem letting ourselves down. Like, I commit to, you know, I'm going to work out 5 times a week. Well, if I don't, and I haven't told anybody about it, you know, how badly am I really going to beat myself up if I did 4? But when you make a commitment to someone else, it's a lot harder to break. That accountability to another person outside is a lot harder. For example, my niece is my workout partner. And so 3 or 4 times a week, we have, you know, we either meet on the canal to go for a run, or we meet at the gym. And I won't let her down. I mean, short of, you know, a bad headache or a meeting coming up that I didn't expect, I won't cancel on her. Whereas if it was just me having to go to the canal to go for a run, we're much more likely to break that commitment. So accountability is really important, especially when it comes to things that you're scared to do. So if you need to take a risk right now, if there's something you've been holding back on in your life and it's time to break through that fear, public accountability is something that that I've used to move myself into action in my business many times. When I'm scared to do something and I put it out there to my clients or my list and I say, you know, we're going to do this teleclass. Well, guess what? I've now made a commitment. I've got to create that teleclass. I know for years I wanted to write a newsletter in my business and I was so hesitant to put my, you know, words on paper and then my thoughts out into the world and who was going to reject me and, you know, who was going to unsubscribe. I held back for years doing that. Well, finally I thought, you know, this is something I really want to do, so I sent a note out to people saying, okay, I'm going to send out a quarterly newsletter. So quarterly wasn't that frequent back then, but now I had the pressure, the external pressure, to say that you've got to take this action, you've got to do that. Now people expect a weekly newsletter from me. It's kind of like that accountability is on the outside. It's almost like this systematic way of making sure I keep writing and creating a newsletter. I had an experience a couple weeks ago on vacation where we went to Busch Gardens, and there was a roller coaster. It was one of the biggest roller coasters in the park. And I love roller coasters. They make me a little nervous, but nothing that would ever stop me, because I don't mind heights. My boyfriend was with me, and he's actually scared of heights, and he's okay with me sharing this story, so just so you know, I'm not ratting him out on something. So he saw this roller coaster, and we were both kind of like, wow, this roller coaster is about 210 feet, I think, high, and instead of it being a typical roller coaster with the cars, you know, like 10 cars in a row or 6 cars in a row, what it is 10 people in a row, 3 rows back, so it's just one car, 10 people in a row and 3 rows. And what it does is it climbs up to the top, and when it gets to the top of the highest point, which again is like 200 feet in the air, it stops, and it actually dangles the first row, and there's no your feet are hanging, and the first row is dangling in the air. You're held in by a harness, but in essence, you're right at the edge, and your feet are dangling. And so the first time we went on it, he wouldn't go from the front row. I wanted to, but he said, no, going in the back row. So we went in the back row. It was still scary, but we rode it. And then we went through the park and went on the rest of the other, there were like 4 other roller coasters that we did. At the end of the day, I said, you know what? I said, if I don't go on, it was called the Griffin. I said, if I don't go on the Griffin in the front row before we leave, I said, I'm going to be really disappointed. So I said, I want to do it. And to my surprise, he said, I'm going to go with you. I was like, from the front row? He said, yeah. So we get on this, and right, like, you know, if you have ever been on a roller coaster, you're kind of in the line, and you're snaking through the line, and you kind of get to a point where there's a point of no return where you can't get back, and there's too many people, you're crowded, and you're kind of in, so you kind of have to go. That's kind of, I think, how he felt was, you know, at one point it was going to be really hard to not get on this thing now, even though he was getting increasingly nervous. So anyway, so we went on this roller coaster, and in the front row, and we dangled over the edge, and he had his eyes closed, and I was screaming because it was really scary. We get off the roller coaster, and I expected him to say, well, gee, that was fun, let's go. And instead he says, let's go again. I was like, really? Okay. So we go on again. We go on the front row again, and then we went on a third time. And what we noticed by the third time was we weren't scared anymore. He had his eyes open. He was waving to people on the ground. I was really enjoying it, like no fear whatsoever. It was a blast. And so what we talked about afterwards was, you know, he kind of felt like he had to do it, you know, kind of the peer pressure of the girlfriend's going to go and you be a man and step up and go on it. But then once we were in the corral, you know, it just kind of guides you. It's like, you know, you're never really completely ready. It just becomes your turn. You have to go. And then once you're strapped into the roller coaster, there's no turning back. So it was kind of like it pushed us to face our fears. And once we did it a couple times, our fear went away. So to me, that was a great lesson to say that when you're really scared to do something, try to create a system or some type of accountability that pushes you to do it, that forces you to do it. So I have a girlfriend who's was terrified of public speaking. And she was, you know, for years she said she was going to join a Toastmasters group because then she thought she would get over the fear. But nothing was pushing her to, you know, join Toastmasters. So then she got laid off earlier this year, and she joined a networking group for people that were in career transition. And they asked her if she would speak, facilitate their meetings. And she agreed to it because she knew she wanted to face this fear. So every Monday morning, she has to get up and she has to facilitate this group, and sometimes there's 20 people and sometimes there's 40 people. But every Monday morning now she faces that fear. Well, she's gotten to the point where she's quite comfortable handling that, so she's offered to do other speaking engagements, like she's taken on additional opportunities to face that fear. But what she did was brilliant. She put herself in a position where she couldn't turn back. She just, you know, she just had to go. So anything that you're really afraid to do that you think would, you know, move your life forward, find a way to, you know, make that public commitment or find that accountability where you can't shrink back. You just have to go for it. Number three strategy for thriving right now is gratitude. And when I was thinking about this topic, I was really looking at myself in the past 6 months, and what I've noticed is that every time that I'm filled with gratitude, things just seem to work better. And I don't know the real, if there's a scientific or, you know, the spiritual reason behind this or whatever. All I know is my own specific example that I can share with you, as well as the example of others. And I know that when I'm focused on what's not working, the frustration builds, you know, the disappointment builds, or more things seem to show up that aren't working or add to the disappointment. But when I'm focused on what works and how grateful I am for everything that I have in my life, it seems to attract more things, you know, into my life. It seems like when we appreciate someone in a relationship, you know, when we show appreciation for a spouse or a coworker or a boss or something like that, they seem to do more nice things for us. And I think that's the law of reciprocity. You know, it works the same in the universe, that when we're showing appreciation, when we're showing gratitude, more good things seem to show up for us. The other thing that it does is it changes our focus. So, you know, when you're having a bad day or when you're worried about something that's going on, and all of a sudden you shift your focus to what you're grateful for, what you focus on expands. And all of a sudden those bad things, those negative things seem to shrink down. It's unfortunate when you see somebody in an unfortunate state and then that triggers your gratitude. I wish it would come sometimes easier than that, but I'll give you an example. The other day I was driving down the street and I saw this girl walking with braces on her legs. I don't know whether she had polio or something like that, but she wasn't able to walk really easily. And prior to that, I was feeling very frustrated about this weight that I want to lose. If you wondered why weight keeps coming up as a goal that I talk about, it's because it's my goal. But I was kind of in that, you know, I try to get dressed and the clothes don't fit and I'm frustrated and I'm, you know, mad because I missed the gym or whatever it is. And I'm kind of in that mindset of frustration and disappointment. And then I see this girl walking down the street and all of a sudden I'm just hit by how fortunate I am to have legs that work, to be disease-free, to be, you know, healthy, able to run. And all of a sudden, it shifted my entire energy and my entire day because I just sat in gratitude and thought how lucky I am. And like I said, it's sad that it took someone with unfortunate circumstances to trigger that in me, but I really do try and think about the things that I'm thankful for because that does seem to be the mechanism that creates more good things in your life. And I've started a great habit before bedtime, which is I lay there and I think about three things I'm grateful for right before I fall asleep. It seems to help me sleep better, seems to, you know, calm the mind and give you a really positive focus before falling asleep. So that's a great ritual that I've started. I don't do it every single night. I don't want to say I'm that disciplined, but I'd say 80% of the time before I fall asleep, I'm thinking of three things that I'm grateful for. Another thing to do is to share that with somebody. So if you are lucky enough to have dinner with your family or somebody that you can share your three things of gratitude to, I think it makes it even more powerful. And there's a great example that illustrates, or a great story that illustrates, you know, what you focus on expands to show that your mind really can't focus on more than one thing at once. We all think we're great at multitasking, but the truth is your mind is very singular in its focus. And if you're concentrated on one thing, you can't see something else. So the illustration is that your mind is like a miner's hat with the beam of light coming off the front of it. So if you're in a coal mine, you know, in one of the dark shafts, and you've got that beam of light, then the only thing you can see is whatever that beam of light shines directly on. So if you're walking down that shaft and you see on the left-hand side there's a pile of gold, and then on the right-hand side there's a pile of dirt, well, if you're shining your light, if you're looking at the gold, you can't even see the dirt because it's in the dark. But if you turn your attention and you turn your light over to the dirt on the right-hand side, what can't you see now? You can't see the gold on the left. And our minds work exactly like that in our life. If we're overly focused on what's negative and what's bad and what's not working and where we're disappointed, then that tends to be all we see, and we forget the good in our life. However, if we change our focus and we focus back on the things that are positive, things that are going right, things we're thankful for, and you know what? I don't care how bad things are. and what you're struggling with right now, we can always find something to be thankful for, whether it's our family or our health, or the fact that we woke up this morning versus the alternative. There's always something to be thankful for, and when you're focused on those things, it minimizes the other negative things that are happening. Okay, so just to go back over those three strategies again, the first one was networking, again, because I think all good opportunities come through relationship. So whether it's, you know, networking online with social media or it's face-to-face networking, I think you have to do both nowadays. That will bring you opportunities. Number two is accountability. When you have goals that you've set and you want to take action, make yourself accountable to something besides yourself. That will move you forward so much faster. And number three is gratitude. If you focus on what is working, what is positive, even amidst, you know, all the conversation about the economy, if you find those things to keep in your focus, that's going to bring more good things to you. So I want to give you a little bit of homework, and then I'm going to give you the free offer for the disc. So the homework is I want you to look at one of your top three worries or concerns, and that's what we did at the beginning of the call. And I want you to just pick one. So either pick the biggest one, the one that's on your mind the most, the one that first came to your mind, or whichever one. Just pick one of those three top worries or concerns. Now what I want you to do is I want you to think of a goal that would help you with that worry. Okay, so what could you do that could just move you in the right direction with addressing that worry? So if you have financial concerns, you know, could making an appointment with a financial planner help you? If, you know, weight is a concern for you, would losing 10 pounds, you know, alleviate that concern? So now that you think of a goal that would help, break the goal into the minimum, target, and outrageous. So put the MTO. And what's the minimum that you want to accomplish before, let's say, June is over? So we've got like, what, 8-7 days? So a week. That's a good time frame, a week. So what's the minimum that you could accomplish towards that goal in a week? What's your target? And then what would be outrageous? What would make you ecstatically happy? Now think about what's the first action you can take towards that goal. And remember, action isn't about planning or thinking or meditating or sitting longer thinking about this, but it's actually taking an action, calling someone, sending an email, you know, scheduling an appointment, a meeting, whatever. So what's the first action you can take? And then who can you commit to? So who can you get to keep you accountable to take that action? And I would say ask them to keep you accountable right after this teleclass is over. And then once that is accomplished and you're making, you know, progress towards dealing with that concern or worry, then do the same process for the other two. You know, think of a goal that would help you, think of the first action you need to take, and then create accountability around that action. So I hope you enjoyed the information in today's teleclass. Like I said, it's things that I've been applying over the last few months to my business and my life, and I've found it very helpful, and I wanted to pass it along to you as well. So again, this is Nancy Roberts, and I hope you have a great day.